Very, very beautiful, attractive phone, and I highly recommend it. And I think more people will be excited about the phone now that we have some much more exciting hardware coming out. Anyway, back to gaming. Not a lot of you have seen the phone, but XNA has been around for a while. XNA is a managed .NET framework based application platform and set of tools built on Visual Studio that make it extremely easy to build very cool games. And you know, it actually came about at Microsoft about 5 or 6 years ago, maybe 7 now. People looked at the industry and there was a lot of thinking going on that, wow, it's really hard to build very cool games. Generally speaking, only very, very large game studios are successful at building games these days. And so the independent developers sort of edged out. And with that in mind, a bunch of very, very smart people at Microsoft, much smarter than I am, went about thinking about how do we solve this problem. And XNA was the result. They came up, you know, .NET framework is very easy to write applications with, and let's build a game platform based on .NET framework. So that was XNA. And when we came to Windows Phone a couple of years ago, we knew we needed to have a game platform that could ramp up really fast. And so because we knew we were going to have .NET framework based applications, it was a very, very easy question for us, how do we get games? And XNA came out of that discussion. So today we're going to talk about games on Windows Phone. We're going to actually walk through building a basic 2D game end-to-end with XNA. Then we're going to talk about Windows Phone 7.5, which adds some features and functionality to what you can do with games on the phone. And then we'll talk a little bit about what do you do after you build a game, because people want to sell their game and make money, and we'll talk about that just a little bit at the end. At the end of this session, you'll have received examples of how to use XNA Game Studio to build a game, and how to also integrate XNA and Silverlight together, because now in Windows Phone 7.5, you can build an application that uses both together. And it's really, really cool. So one point here, don't get too confused about me talking about XNA Game Studio versus the Windows Phone SDK or the Windows Phone Developer Tools, because the Windows Phone Developer Tools include XNA Game Studio. It has a separate name also because you can build XNA games for Xbox 360 and for Windows 7 on the PC. And so, you know, those folks who are targeting those platforms also want to use XNA. And in fact, XNA lets you create a project that targets all three. But, you know, it's very, very critical to just, you know, get this out in the open up to start, though. You know, a lot of people have talked historically about, oh, you can write the code once and it will run everywhere. Well, the fact of the device is that, you know, the characteristics of each type of device are so different. A console is extremely different from a phone. And so building a great game on a console versus a phone is something that people really need to think about. And yes, there are cases where you can use assets and both, and that makes sense to share code in some cases where you have logic in your update loop. But you really just have to be very aware of the distinctiveness of each platform when you build solutions that way. So I just wanted to mention that up front. So Windows Phone, few points up front here about Windows Phone. It's rather high-end hardware for a phone that supports games of a very performant nature. There are a lot of different premium gaming features that we provide, and we have a very, very rapid development cycle, and I've talked about that already. I'm going to go through this very quickly because I just want to get to building the game. You know, in our very first release here, we had Windows Phone 7.0. This was last year. We had WVGA as the one resolution that we support, and in some ways we have a restrictive, what we call chassis spec, and we do that because we want to have a uniform application platform. We want you to be able to run it, to write an application or game and be assured that it will run on every single Windows phone. That's a big challenge because we work with a lot of different hardware manufacturers, and mobile operators, and they want to differentiate in a lot of different ways. So getting to one single chassis is a very, very big challenge. Will we be able to do it forever? I don't know. But you know, keep in mind, no matter what happens, we are very, very focused on the software developer. And so what I mean by that is that even if we did get to a point where we differentiated our hardware a little bit and gave some of these operators and OEMs a few options, we would be very, very, very aware of the developer challenge imposed by that. We would want to make sure, and so, you know, we're focused on the developer. We're very developer-focused. My point is that if there are any hardware variations down the road, and I'm not saying there are, but if there were, we would be very focused on how to make that as easy as possible for developers. In version 2 here, this is 7.5. 7.5 is OS 7.1. I'm very embarrassed about that, but that's just the way it is. So the OS is called 7.1. The product is Windows Phone 7.5. And there were some slight processor changes, and an optional gyroscope was added. We'll touch on that. There's a session tomorrow where I'm going to talk in depth about sensors like gyroscope, accelerometer, and if you're interested. Premium gaming features. You know, Windows Phone supports Xbox Live. That's basically the point here. As a developer, you can leverage Xbox Live on the phone if you are a registered developer. So that's the big caveat. It's not too hard to become a registered developer. You can actually talk to our game studio, Microsoft Game Studios, and they are willing to talk to independent developers about becoming a published developer. And there's an email address at the end of the presentation where you would send, you know, hey, I would like more information about becoming a registered developer. But when you leverage Xbox Live API, that means that you can do really interesting things in your game, like have achievements and leaderboards. And so if a person uses Xbox, how many people here have an Xbox? A number of folks? Xbox is really popular among people playing games. And, you know, if you have an avatar and a gamer score, a lot of these folks playing games will, you know, really like to, you know, work on getting their gamer score up and so forth. And that's kind of cool. And there's leaderboards so you can compete against your friends. And there's also asynchronous turn-by-turn gaming if you have something like a poker game and you want to play against someone else. Cross-platform, too. So it's a great thing that we have that no one else has. Very easy to access once you get access to it. And we've got very fast, rapid development with Visual Studio, Expression Blend, Silverlight, and XNA are two application frameworks. You know, XNA is really, really focused on game development. Silverlight's event-driven. So if you've done any event-driven programming, you know what Silverlight is. It's just focused on your application basically works off of a different series of events that take place. And when those events take place, you perform some sort of logic operation. In XNA, you know, you've got a game loop. And that game loop iterates, generally speaking, every 30 times a second. And we do support 60 times a second in 7.5, but there's very, very limited amounts of benefits to going with the higher frame rate and negative impacts on things like battery life. So we don't recommend that. 30 frames per second. You can use C# or VB.net. I happen to think they're both very, very similar programming languages. And most of the folks I know focus on C#. Now in OS 7.1 or Windows Phone 7.5, we have interop. This means you can use them both together. And this is an outstanding thing. And here's why. XNA is the main mechanism you can use to access 3D graphic acceleration on the device. So that means now it's, for the very first time, it is much easier to add 3D modeling to a Silverlight application. And an example of this that we've shown quite a lot is a British Airways application that allows you to pick a seat on your plane, and it actually has a little model of the plane that you fly through, and it shows you where your exact seat looks like. So there are many, many different types of ways that 3D modeling can make an application experience much more compelling. And so we're excited about that for Silverlight developers. For XNA developers, one of the things that was always rather tricky in XNA was managing text input and fonts and doing some sort of like building a leaderboard and so forth, because it's not very much focused on events or fonts. You have to treat fonts as sprites. And so now that you can use Silverlight in your XNA game, you can just add Silverlight controls and you're good to go. So it massively simplifies some of what was the most tedious parts of XNA. And we'll show you that at the end, assuming we get to it. So we're going to start here. We're going to go in and build a game with XNA. But right before I do that, I just want to explain a little bit about how it works here. We've abstracted out the game loop into these five stages here. Your game must initialize. And then it loads content. And these will be graphical assets, they'll be image files, they could be 3D models. These are going to be assets that bring your game to life that some artists may have created off on the side. XNA supports what we call the graphic pipeline, and I'll show you that in a minute. But what that means is that building an XNA game, we support a very, very rich ability for you to segment out your process altogether so that graphical assets are built over here, your game is built over here, your program and logic, and the content pipeline will dynamically translate those assets into appropriate textures and so forth at compile time. That means that you don't have to manage the assets in a very complicated manner, which is often the case without such a mechanism. Then you have the update draw loop, and this is where the heart of the game takes place. Update is where you perform any of the logic that your game relies on. So you may have items colliding, you may have objects moving around on the screen, you may be capturing input, you may be looking at the accelerometer data. That all takes place in the update part of the game loop. Draw is where you actually draw things on the screen. So anything that's not drawing, it goes an update, basically, with the exception of loading content and initializing and constructing objects and so forth. So most stuff will be in the update section, except for drawing to the screen. At the end, you want to unload content. This is really critical because you are operating on a constrained device. The phone has a limited amount of memory. It has a limited amount of processor power. It has limited battery life. It has limited bandwidth. It has unique input characteristics. So there's all these things about a device that you want to be aware of. And so, being a good citizen on the device means that you unload assets that you no longer need. And that's when that takes place. Content pipeline, I mentioned this very briefly here. When you create a new XNA project in Visual Studio, you get two projects. You get a project for your code, and you get a project for your content. And it's very, very easy. You drag your content over, and the content pipeline will automatically process that content at compile time. And here you see two PNG files have been added to the content project in the top part of that dialog. And the bottom half, you see the properties on that object. And you'll see content importer and content processor. And this is basically describing how that content will be transformed at compile time. In this case, it's going to be made a texture that's handled directly by the XNA framework. So these importers and processors are extensible. It may be that you have your own wild format that you want to support for whatever variety of reason. We let you do that. You can extend our content processor in this way. And it adds a lot of flexibility. It's one of the much more advanced scenarios that you might do. We still provide it. So let's start building our game. One of the main things you want to do in a 2D game is you want to draw something on the screen. How do I just draw something on screen? There's two basic steps. You load content, and you call. Here we're using the sprite batch object to draw that object to a screen. So I apologize, I'm going to sit down here so I can actually do this in Visual Studio. Let's create a new project. And what you'll see here, I have Visual Basic, Visual C Sharp. This is Visual Studio Express. It's 100% free. If you go to create.msdn.com, you can download this if you haven't already. Highly recommend you do. It's a fantastic integrated development environment. Very highly regarded. It's absolutely amazing. We're giving it away for free. But we are because we love developers, as you may have heard. So when I go into, I see here under C#, Silverlight for Windows Phone projects and XNA Game Studio projects. We've decided I'm going to make an XNA Game Studio project, so I click there. And you'll see here Windows Phone Game, Game Library, Silverlight and XNA application. This is new in 7.5. I can also create a Windows desktop game or library, or even an Xbox 360 console. So we let you build a console application. I can also create these projects and add them all to one solution if I want to. But for now, I'm just going to create a basic game. And this is the version selector. It may be that for some folks, they still want to compile to 7.0, so we've given them the ability to do so. But you really, 7.1 gives you fast application switching, so there really shouldn't, and at this point, most devices out there that had Windows Phone 7.0 have received the update to 7.5. Every single Windows Phone 7.0 device is receiving an upgrade to 7.5 for free. So that's another very core principle of Windows Phone, that we want to protect the user's investment. And so you should, as a developer, you are very well advised to target 7.1 at this point. So here's my project that got created by Visual Studio. You'll see here a C# file. This is my game, game1.cs. And this project lives in the main game project here. And let's see if I can do that. Or actually, it's this one, isn't it? There it is. So I've got my solution file. And inside the solution, I have two projects. I have my game project, and I have my content project. And within my game project, I have properties here. WMAP manifest is an important file that describes many of the aspects of the application. I'm not going to talk about that now. But then there's some graphic files here that actually live in the project. These are the icon, the tile, the default tile. The main most important file here is this C# file, game1.cs. In the content project, I don't have anything yet, so I'm going to actually go add some stuff from this directory here. I've got a PNG, two PNGs, and a WAV file I'm going to add to my game. And I just drag those over to the content project. And that's as easy as it is to actually add content to the content project. Now, let's just, I've actually pre-done some of this here, just in the interest of saving time. But in order to paint that content to the screen, I need to do a couple things. I need to add some variables to the constructor in order to enumerate what those objects are going to be. So there I'm going to create a texture 2D for the, I'm right now adding the player of my game. And so I add a player texture. It's a type texture 2D. I'm also going to add a vector of player position. This vector is going to be the two-dimensional representation, so it's a vector 2, not a vector 3. And it's going to be the two-dimensional representation of where that player is painted on the screen. Now I'm going to load that object. So I go to Content Load, and I can actually make this a little bit bigger here. And a very easy shortcut, if you don't know Visual Studio here, is I can actually just pull this pull down here, and it will give me quick access to all of the different methods in the project file. I can go to load content just like that. And you'll see here is load content, and this is the template. The template is basically telling me what to do here. It says, use this dot content to load your game content here. So I'm just going to actually just paste in this line here for player texture. My player texture is basically going to equate that PNG file, player.png, which is what I'm referencing here. It's loading content of type texture 2D. So that's essentially what's going on there. And then I update. And in update, I'm going to perform the, actually no, this goes to update here. And in update, I'm going to go and add my sprite batch to draw. And I go here, and I say, sprite batch begin, sprite batch draw that texture, draw it at the position, And make it, now the color here is an augmentation, so white actually is a neutral transform that does perform no change to that. So all I have to do is that, and I should have something that compiles now. And I can build it here and just target the emulator. The emulator will load up. It's deploying to the emulator. And you'll see here, still starting up. There it goes. It's running. Now it's deploying. Now it's running the application. And you'll see that it ran, but there's nothing painted. Now, what did I do wrong? I actually did not enumerate where the player position is. So why did I not do that? That was pretty silly of me. Let's go over here. And you'll see the way that player position was being defined is by, and I also didn't define sprite batch either. So that's kind of, actually sprite batch is already defined. So you'll see sprite batch is right here. But player position I need to also enumerate. And so let's see here. Draw, base draw. Let's actually take one more shortcut and go into my C# file. And it should be doo-doo-doo. I love doing these live. Type. Find that C# file, isn't it? Yeah, so let me just find where it was here. Actually, I think I have it down here. Here we go. Draw the texture, load content. No. Appreciate your patience while I figure out what's going on here. So this should actually work because let's do you know, I shouldn't need to do that. And oh, here we go. Thank you. So here's the finished C# file, and you'll see here, here's the 2D for player position. Let me search for player position. This is how real developers work, by the way. You'll see here, that's actually later in the game when I do that. And here's where I'm defining rectangles, which is later on too, and that's the other player position, and there's no other player position, so I shouldn't need to do that. Let's try this one more time and see what happens. We'll go back to here. And one more time. And again, nothing. So what am I, does anyone know what I'm doing wrong? I should use what? Oh, you know what? Boy, you are smart. Boy, I am just, wow, that is just, here we go, draw. Duh. So I appreciate your help there. That was very embarrassing. There you go. So I drew the object to the screen. So let's take a back look at here at the next step. 2D, let's talk a little bit about what we did there, though. I mean, really quickly here. 2D objects, you're basically blitting textures to the screen. And sprite batch is the main way you do it. Sprite font is how you automatically can do this with fonts, but you don't need to do that anymore because you have Silverlight. And 2D primitives can be drawn using 3D calls as well. So if you're building a 3D game and you need to draw a 2D primitive, that's another mechanism you can use to do that. But if you're doing complex 2D curves, Silverlight may be a better option, given the basis that it handles vector graphics in a much more easy manner. 3D graphics here, there's full 3D graphic acceleration supported through D3D 11, and you don't even need to know any of the complexity behind it because once you start using these configurable effects, you get them for free. The one criticism we get here quite a bit is that we don't have programmable shader support, which is how you start to do some very interesting super differentiated type things. But what we do support are the basic effect, the dual texture effect, alpha test effect, That's how you get some of the actual metallic look and feel, environment map effect, and skin effect for skin. One of the main things you want to do is you want to be able to take input in the XNA framework. And the way that you do this in XNA is through touch panel. You enable gestures on touch panel, and then in update, you actually say, you know, is gesture available? Read the gesture results, and then use that to change the player position. So let's take a look at what this looks like, and I guarantee you this is going to be faster than the last one was. So let's go like this, and we'll go back over here, and we'll open up slide 14. And so here we have our initialize. In initialize, we're going to actually just go, and we're going to take the touch panel and initialize it. And I can very, very quickly get to initialize here just by going up to the constructor, which is going to be game one, and putting that in there. And so that's going to enable the gestures there. Now, here in update, I'm going to say while touch panel is gesture available. Let's go over here. Wrong one. Let's go back into this one here, and we'll go to update. And so what this will do is give me the ability to, in the update, because this is not a draw, this is handling the touch panel. This is going to give me the ability to, let's see what's, oh, so what's missing here is, sorry, yes, you're right, that's right. So I'm actually in the wrong spot here. Thank you. You can see that I'm not a full-time developer in my day job. But I do know about this and how it works. So you'll see there I now have input support. So the whole point here is that someone who is not a developer in their full-time day job is able to very, very easily with just a few lines of code. Most developers steal, by the way. So I happen to know a lot of developers. And so what you do is you go out there and you search on the web and you find the right sample code. And this is the thing that's great about XNA. It's so easy to just very, very easily find these patterns and make a working game. And so one thing we didn't do here is we didn't make it very discriminant. So I don't have to click on the ship to make it move. I can click down here. But you'll see that it's still, and I can drag it off the screen, which is not good. But it's still tracking to my movement. And so we've got the basics down of what we're doing here. We're taking input into the XNA framework. So let's go on to the next step here. You know, just a little bit more about input touch and accelerometer. We support gesture-based touch through gesture sample. This is different than the touch panel. This gives you two touch points, and you can actually leverage gestures like drag, tap, pinch. We have a set of five or six of them. But if you want raw touch input, you do use touch panel like we're doing now, and you get up to four touch points, and that's how you do that. It gets a little bit more complicated very quickly. Accelerometer input goes through events. So you need to actually instantiate the accelerometer object and start tracking on when that reading changes. And then in 7.1, we have the ability to add gyroscope, and we have what we call the motion API, which is a sensor fusion API. What that does is it takes a lot of the complexity out of having to actually transform the information you're getting from those sensors. So raw compass data, for example, is extremely noisy. If you built a compass application without any sort of smoothing algorithm, you would get a compass that goes like this all the time, which doesn't look very good. The Motion API automatically applies that smoothing algorithm. So there's a number of features like that. We'll talk about that tomorrow in the sensors talk, actually. So let's get the next step here. I want to add a bad guy to my application, my game, because many games have what you would think of as a bad guy. And so what's going on here is I define the position for the enemy. We're using a sine wave function here. Very, very simple math. to denote what path that enemy would take. If you were writing a real game, you would want to do something more complicated here in terms of how that character moves on the screen. Very, 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 you know, professional level games do all sorts of artificial intelligence at this stage where they actually have that object behave in a certain intelligent-like manner based on math. There's a number of libraries out there that will help you provide you this functionality, actually. And building XNA games, in many cases, becomes an exercise in leveraging these existing libraries. So if you want to add physics to your game, for example, there's a number of really great physics libraries that you can get and download for free and very, very quickly allow you to add the impression of that your experience is taking place in a physical world with different sorts of behaviors. Now, what we're also doing here, in if rectangle intersect, we're defining rectangles that are going to be intersection targets so that we can simulate a collision between these two objects. And then what we're going to have happen is that if there is some sort of collision, we're going to do something. But we'll get to that in the next step when we add a sound. So let's go and very, very quickly stop debugging here and look over here. And look at my file here of the actual code and go in here. And you'll see here the very first thing here is I'm going to construct the enemy texture. I'm adding the enemy to the game. It's a texture 2D. Its position is a vector 2. I'm also defining a start position because we want to move the enemy around and at some point I may want him to start over again. This float here, enemy speed, in gamer circles, game developer circles, this is what's often referred to as a magic number because it's a float that we're defining that's going to have some fundamental impact on the behavior of the character. So what that means is that, you know, here we're defining speed. So 8 is the number that we're using. It's a float, so we add the F. And I can go right here and just add this in. Next step is to load the content. So to load the content here, I'm actually going to go and say, you know, enemy texture, content load, start position, it's a new vector. Now here's what I'm doing here. Let's actually put this in and I'll tell you what I'm doing here because it's kind of interesting. Something, it's a pattern that you may want to follow. We'll go to load content and then we'll go here under the texture there, and we'll just add that. What I'm doing here is I'm saying enemy start position equals new vector 2, graphics device viewport width. How wide is the viewport? And how high is the viewport? And I'm dividing that by 2. And so what I'm doing here is I'm loading up that vector with a value based on the width and height of the screen. And that's a useful paradigm to follow in many cases. I'm also reinitializing my enemy position to the enemy start position because it's going to be where he starts. Now, if I go back over here, the next step is to update. And I'm going to be updating. This is where the math takes place. I'm actually going to be performing this math in order to dictate the moving behavior. And so let's take this over here into update. And in update, I'll put it right under the touch panel here, right before base update game timer. And you'll see here enemy position X, enemy position Y, sine function. And then here's what I'm doing if he goes off the screen. So if X is less than 0, go back to the start position. Here's where I'm setting speed. And here's where I'm computing speed again based on the enemy position Y. This is actually, what this is doing here is performing, I've got it in here twice, so that's not right. I want to actually remove this here. And here's where I'm defining the rectangles. The rectangles are going to be rectangles around each object. And if they intersect, I'm going to perform some sort of boom, but I'm also going to go back to the start position. So let's try this, and explosion is not defined yet. So that's where I would be running the sound. So let's take that out for now. And let's run and see how I'm going here. So I'm not drawing. I didn't do a draw. So that's why the draw didn't take place. I need to go in and draw my enemy. And let's go back to draw. I'm not going to perform that error twice. And within my sprite patch, I actually go draw. And so let's say draw and run. And there's my enemy. So now if I hit, I can go around and I see my enemy is moving. And if I hit it, it goes back to start. If it goes off the screen, it goes back to start again. So, you know, I can start and I can start hitting it like that. You can imagine in some games that might be an achievement of some sort. I don't know. So, you know, look, very rudimentary, but it's an example of the type of graphical power that you have here. We're operating at 30 frames per second, and we have the basic framework of a game. Now, next step, let's go back and get going here. Math. We talked a little bit about, you know, we use this sine function here. You can imagine, this is probably the, you know, where X and A starts to get a little harder for some people. But, you know, look, there's some basic math functions that are critical towards creating any compelling game experience. And so in the XNA class libraries, we've got support for many of these. Curve, Lerp, SmoothStep, Hermite curves, these are different types of curves. Transformations, so this has to do with, you know, taking a vector and transforming it in a certain specific way. Point matrix transformations, quaternions. Quaternions are very useful when interpolating gyroscope data. Collisions, so this here's where we're using the rectangles to create this collision. Intersects is another method you get for free here. Random functions. So in many cases, you want to create behavior on the screen based on the generation of a random number. And that's what we're talking about there. Audio is very, very easy in XNA. Here it's simply a matter of adding that content to the content pipeline loading that content. And then playing that content at the appropriate time. So let's go take care of that really quick. And so, you know, I already have the content in there. I go add this to the constructor. And I'm going to load the content. Explosion equals content load. It says type sound effect. Explosion is the name of the file. So that's going to go in my load content. I'll put it right here under load. And so that loads the content. And then I'm going to play that content, explosion.play, at the appropriate time in my update loop. So here, that's right there. And so now, what that will do is I have this game. And let's see if you can hear this. It's kind of low. So I don't know if you can hear that or not. It's on, off. Let's try it. Try it this way. Nope. Doesn't appear to be on. Well, maybe you can hear that. Maybe you can't. But I've added sound to my game. There it goes. Very, very easy to add sound to a game. Even I can do it. So, let's go back here. There are, you know, that's the simple way of adding sound. You can load WAV files or raw PCM buffer and use sound effect fire and you don't need to think about it at all even. You can play up to 64 concurrent sounds. And there are custom formats that you can support through the content processor by extending the content processor like I mentioned before. You can also play music, and you do that by creating a media player object. There's another way to do this, a much, much more complicated manner. And what this does is it allows you to manipulate buffers manually. Most games don't need to do this. If you're doing something specific to an audio stream, for example, that you're getting off the internet, it could be cases where you want to manipulate a buffer directly. Now, in Windows Phone 7.5, what did we add? We added Silverlight, and, you know, we added a lot of stuff, actually. The one that I'm really going to talk about here is the XNA plus Silverlight. But fast application switching, That's a huge one. That's where you now can actually, you know, instead of basically in Windows Phone 7, you may have heard me say this already, but I'll just say it one more time. In Windows Phone 7, when your application was put in the background, we terminated your process. We did this in the interest of protecting the health of the device and the user experience. You know, it was a rather heavy-handed approach to kill your process. So we knew that, but you know, in the interest of getting the product out, we took that approach. In 7.5, we've added fast application switching. What this means is, though, that when you go in the background, your process is frozen, but it is not killed. And so you get the opportunity then, when the user comes back, to reload your process almost instantaneously. There's very little lag involved. So this does require a recompile for Windows Phone 7.5. And for game development, it may mean that you need to reload content resources. Because even though your process remains resident, your memory is going to be subject to the characteristics of the device. And so there may be cases where you have to check and see the state of your memory on return is the thing that happens. XNA plus Silverlight, we talked about this. We also add background agents in Silverlight. Background agents allow you to continue to run certain processes in the background on a periodic basis or on a resource-intensive basis. So say I want to run a process only when my phone is plugged in. We'll talk about this tomorrow. There's a talk specifically about it. We added a unified motion API. I mentioned that. That's the sensor fusion. We added live camera access. This means you can now write applications that consume the raw video feed from the camera and incorporate that directly in your application. This is most useful in what people talk about as augmented reality applications. I may want to point my phone at something and see a label of what it is, for example. There's a number of restaurant applications that do this. But it also has great game applicability. There may be cases where you have a game and you want to consume a video feed so that you actually are performing some sort of game operation, but seeing it in the context of the environment that you're actually in. SQL CE support, not really a game feature, but there could be instances. The one exception for that is for your role-playing games, where you have a character that you've created and the character has, you know, damage points, hit points, whatever, and you could very likely have hundreds of attributes for this character that you want to track, and SQL CE could give you a way of managing that data in a very, very, very quick manner. Point to take into consideration there is that you access SQL CE through what we call language integrated query, and link can be a very big problem from a performance standpoint, especially if you're performing a link query within the context of the game loop itself. So you really need to be careful about how you use SQL CE. And socket support. Socket support is in Windows Phone 7.5. It gives you the ability to do new types of peer-to-peer scenarios that otherwise would not be necessarily available. New tools in Windows Phone 7.5. We have a new memory profiler and CPU profiler. This is a fantastic tool. I don't know how people got along without it, actually. It gives you a graphical picture of the execution of your gamer app over a period of time. You run it in the debugger, you want to run it against an actual device because the device has performance characteristics different than the device emulator. So you'll just say run a profiler, and then you stop after you perform whatever operations it is that you want to measure. Then you'll look at the graphics, and the graphics will show you memory usage and CPU usage, and you can then drill in and see exactly what sorts of program calls were taking place at that time. It's a very good diagnostic tool. Isolated Storage Explorer is another utility for looking at what is actually on the storage that your application can access. Accelerated Location Emulator, you can now, in the emulator, input location and accelerometer data to your app. It's very, very compelling and interesting, but I'm not going to show it today. And new regions, and a new marketplace test kit, and a new ad SDK for both XNA and Silverlight. A lot of people are making very, very compelling amounts of money with the ads. So you can add an ad control to your, and we've just added the number of countries that support ads. So in Russia, we announced today a new partner who is providing ad control support. So that would be the partner that you work with to add ads. This is speaking about, I don't believe our current Microsoft one does have support for Russia yet at this point. The ones that are most interested for gaming here are these three, obviously. Fast app switching, I spoke to this briefly. We have a life cycle of our application. By default, your app becomes dormant. When it becomes activated again, what you check is this is app instance preserved variable to see if it's true. If it's true, you do not need to restore from state. If it's true, your app process was not killed. And that's a fast application resume. What can happen is that your application may be tombstoned, and the oldest app on the stack will get tombstoned when memory is in a dire condition on the device. And when you're reactivated, is app instance preserved will return false. And that means you need to restore state to the device. So XNA and Silverlight integration, and I'm going to show this really quick. I don't have a lot of time, but I do for this. Here's the game that we did already. In an XNA Silverlight application, you get an XNA graphics object that you can add to the Silverlight project. And so what this means is that you can switch back and forth, but you can also use this UI element renderer object to draw Silverlight controls directly on the XNA surface. So it's truly shared graphics. And the game loop changes its nature slightly in this model because there's no longer an initialize here. You're taking care of that elsewhere. And in the game loop itself, load content will map to the onNavigated to event. Update becomes an unupdated event, and draw becomes an onDraw event. Unload content becomes an onNavigated from event because Silverlight has a page model, and you're basically mapping the XNA game into the page model. So let's take a look at what this looks like. And so this is very easy because I have this ready, and I'm just going to actually show this to you very quick because we don't have too much time, and I don't want to make you suffer through any sort of problems. Here's our Silverlight application. And so I'm looking at game page, XAML.cs here, but let's actually look at main page because main page is where a Silverlight application will start by default. You can define the page that's loaded at start. So you actually could start directly on your game page. Here's this XNA page that is created by default here. It's nothing special, it just says change to game page on it. What you could imagine is that you have the supporting infrastructure for your game on this page. If you had the start screen that had buttons around getting options or help or leaderboards, you would very likely want to build that in Silverlight. And so that's why this default template is constructed in this manner. Changing to the game page provides a navigation event to the gamepage.xaml. If I open up gamepage.xaml, you'll see no XAML content is required as this page is rendered entirely, thank you, comment, entirely within the XNA framework. The comment is telling me I don't need XAML here because it's all inside the C# file, which is the code behind file. If I go into my code behind file, here's my constructor, and I'm actually adding in this is where I'm actually just instantiating the variables. Inside the constructor here, I've got touch panel enabled, and content manager. So this is slightly different here. Instead of content object, I'm using content manager. And then here's the timer that is actually performing the timer operations. We didn't show this before, but this is how you denote the speed with which your update loop operates. OnNavigated to replaces the unloaded event. And so down here you'll see a shared graphics device manager being set here to true. And the sprite batch is being newed up here. And then down here is where we're loading our textures. I'm setting the positions, and I'm setting that, I'm loading that explosion, and the timer starts, and that's the end of that. Unnavigated from, We're not doing anything here at this point, but this is where you would unload things. Although the only operation that's taking place right now is I'm stopping the timer, and I am setting to false my graphics device manager. On update performs, and then on update is your update. The update operations are here. The only change that you'll notice here is because I was setting this based on the size of the viewport, I have to make some alterations here to change it to shared graphics device manager. But otherwise, it is exactly the same. And then on draw, where this operation takes place. So if I run this, you'll see that I have what is, you know, my Silverlight page, changed to game page, and it's exactly the same game with Silverlight. So not necessarily that interesting at this point because we're not doing any interaction between the two. But it is cool, I mean, that you've got the two things together there. What you can do with this, then, is you can actually build controls that are in Silverlight that manipulate objects in the 3D game. So what we've done in this one is we've added a slider. And so the way that that takes place, if I look at my Solution Explorer here, you'll see, and by the way, the Solution Explorer for our merge project here, you know, it doesn't look very, very different. What you've got here is you've got your content manager project is added. There's also a library that's added here for the content references, but at this stage, there's nothing you really need to know about that. What I've done now to add the Silverlight slider is I actually went in onto the Silverlight page for gamepage.xaml, and I added that slider definition in the XAML. And that's the only change in the XAML file. But if I go over here, and I can position it anywhere within that page just like any other XAML control. If I go over to my game page, I'm using UI element renderer. And I created a new UI element. And what that basically does is it defines you know, how that's going to paint, how that renderer exists. It's just instantiating the main variables of that renderer. And then down on it's going to be down here. I'm actually going to perform an operation based on the actual size of the, let's see here, so UI element and and I'm going to set the speed based on the actual where I have that slider, and that's done right here. Enemy speed equals float slider value. So I'm casting it to a float, which is what I need to do based on the slider. So if I run that, there's a deployment error. And that's, let's see here. There's actually a reference missing. So let me try to build this in isolation and then run it. And then we are good. Change the game page, and you'll see here that speed is now directly tied to the slider. So without too much work, now obviously there's this bug here because I'm moving the object because I haven't detached those two events, but you could very, very easily manipulate objects with Silverlight controls directly in context of the XNA game. So I really appreciate your patience today. Those are the basics of building an XNA game and using the new Silverlight XNA game features of Windows Phone and the Windows Phone platform. Let's just summarize here. And I want to tell you one other thing here about some of the things you need to do when you're thinking about this. There's a 90 megabyte limit for your game. This is a recommendation based on the available memory in the device. And it is a cert requirement, but we only enforce it for devices that are under 256 megs of maximum RAM. And so that means that you can check maximum available RAM and in theory ignore this limit, but we recommend you don't because of the fact that this is going to have an impact on performance of the overall device, and it's good to be considerate in terms of how much memory you use. The amount of objects that you load are going to directly impact the memory consumption of your device. And you can use the profiler to watch how this happens. Now, garbage collection becomes very important here because in the .NET framework, the garbage collector is a process that runs automatically that will dereference variables and free up memory. But it's only done after every 1 megabyte of allocations, and it may be that you want to to do this on your own. And we do have this new generational garbage collector, which is better, but it's still important for you to maintain some idea about what objects are being used and where. And performance is a big issue. If the game doesn't perform well, people are not going to be too interested in it. Some considerations here. It's very easy to start with dynamic types like list, but there are downsides in terms of memory allocation again. Avoid link, we talked about that already. And the classes are going to be value types, so you don't have the issues that you oftentimes have when you use reference types. Here's a picture of that performance profiler, memory profiler. It's very easy to use. It's even in the free SKU. You get this for free in Express. If you select a range there in the graphic above, what you see in the bottom panel is a drill down into the actual what's taking place on the device during that span of time. The marketplace, you have to register for marketplace in order to publish an application or game. It's $99 a year, although there are ways to get free accounts if you're a student or if you're in a startup. You can through the Microsoft DreamSpark program or the BuildSpark program. Many people are going with this model, like I mentioned, about using ads and releasing a free app. But we also have a trial API. And the trial API allows you to define some subset of functionality of your game that's free. And so you can say, I have a trial available. In the marketplace client, they'll see trial and buy. And a user can download the trial. And then you can convert them to buy at any point that you want later in the game. There's an API call. You can say, if they try this 10 times, throw up a dialogue and say, hey, by the way, you've used it 10 times. You can't use it anymore until you buy it. But there's a little bit of an art to that, so it's something you need to think about. Paid apps, you can charge anywhere from 99. This is US dollars, obviously, but there's corresponding values for Russian developers. And submissions are free, but there's a 70-30 split on the revenue that you get from paid apps. Xbox Live, this is the email address to contact if you're interested in leveraging Xbox Live functionality. And obviously it's a huge differentiator. There's an API that you get access to once you are added to this group. And for more resources, the main place that you want to go is create.msdn.com. We've got a game development page there. So that's really all I've got for today. But I'll entertain a few questions. Yes. How many generations? I think you get two. Yes. I don't know Silverlight 5. We were Silverlight 4 runtime on the device. I'm not sure about what it is in Silverlight. I can check into it, though. So, yes. Yes. So nothing to announce about that at this time. But we have officially stated that every application and game you write for Windows Phone, I'm done because I'm at zero here, but every application and game you write for Windows Phone today will run on our next major version. And you'll be able to continue to build XNA games on our next major version. So we have officially stated that. We are very committed to XNA as a platform. There may be some additional things we do, but this will continue to be available for the foreseeable future. I think we're out of time, so people feel free to go, but if you have a question, please let me know what it is. Go ahead. Did you want to say your question? The content pipeline. Yes. Well, loading is different than including the file in the project. So the projects, the files are converted and put into the zap file. They're loaded during the load event. So you maintain control over when things are loaded. It's not done for you. The benefit of the content pipeline is that the file resources will be converted into things like textures, which are easily manipulable in XNA. So.